Dr. Nadia Millington. I am a senior lecturer here at the LSE's Department of Management. I'm also the Deputy Director of the Masters in Social Innovation and Entrepreneurship. And it is my distinct pleasure to welcome all of you here today, because for many of you here, your hearts are aligned to doing good through social enterprise, through businesses that are pro-profit, that also change the lives of the people involved. And because of that, it is such a beautiful thing to come together to celebrate women who are doing, who are trailblazers, who are changing the world in terms of how they impact the disadvantaged and the disenfranchised globally. And tonight we have three such women. Friday marks International Women's Day, and it is really quite a beautiful thing to come together to celebrate women in this space. 10 years ago, if I was giving this speech, there would be no women who were leading a lot of the social enterprises. A lot of social entrepreneurship was related to men who were trailblazers in the field. But tonight, we celebrate the journeys of three women: Grace Olugbodi, Anna Maria Torres, and Elisa Doe. They all run social enterprise or are leaders in this space. Grace is the founder of Virginio and Easy Math Skills, which is the creator of a Race to Infinity maths game, which is changing the way we feel about math, which is making us fall in love with math all over again. Grace? Then we have Ana Maria Torres. Ana Maria Torres is from Rio Sagrado. She has more than 15 years international experience in the social impact world. She's worked with governments, international organizations, and NGOs. And I'll tell you a little bit about her social enterprise. It is such a stunning enterprise because she's actually doing systemic change. So we'll talk a little bit more about that later. And Elisa Doe is the chair of the Board of Trustees at HERA. She's an associate director of mergers and acquisitions at Augusta & Co., where she specializes in renewable energy and investment banking. Can we give our honored guest a round of applause? These three inspiring ladies would speak about their journey, their motivations, their purpose, their business. They will share their business insights, and very importantly, they will provide some advice and give us some golden nuggets of success that can guide all our lives. Now, I have to do some house rules, right? So for Twitter users in the audience, the hashtag for tonight's event is hashtag LSEWomenIn. That is hashtag LSEWomen, W-O-M-E-N, capital W, I, capital I-N, Women In. I would also like to ask you, I know this is terribly painful, but I would also like to ask you to put your phones on silent. You have literally another 5 seconds to send your last text. Sorry, I lecture at LSE, so I know how painful this is. You have 5 seconds to send your last text for the next hour and a half, and we would really love your undivided attention because tonight's event is being recorded and filmed and will be made available via podcast. So we would like there not to be any interruptions via texts or calls, etc. So in the next 5 seconds, can you please turn off your phone, right? As usual, in the end, there will be a chance for you to put questions to the panel. There will also be a drinks reception at the end of the event outside. But for now, let's get tonight started. And it's really important for me to identify that tonight's event has been made possible with the help of HERA. HERA stands for Her Equality, Rights and Autonomy. It was established in 2005 and it empowers women afflicted by human trafficking and other forms of violence, conflict and exploitation through entrepreneurship training, mentoring and grant making. Thank you so much, HERA, in agreeing to co-jointly do this event with us tonight. And I just want to hear or maybe express our gratitude in having you with us. And maybe, Elisa, if you can just introduce the crowd to HERA and what they do, I would really appreciate it for the next 5 minutes. So this is Elisa Doe telling us a little bit about HERA, our partners.
Thank you very much for being here tonight. It's really a pleasure to be here, and thank you very much, LSE, for this wonderful, wonderful event. First of all, it's okay. I can just wing it. So at Luca, as Nadia said, HERA focuses on tackling the issue of human trafficking, a business that is worth 115 billion pounds. And it's estimated that 40 million people are victims of human trafficking or modern slavery. And 75% of that 40 million are girls and women. And behind every statistic lies a story. And a story is how HERA really started. So 15 years ago, our founder, HERA founder, who's called Linal Long, met a woman who had a very good job in Romania. She was a banker. And she got laid off from her corporate job. And shortly after, she was offered a role in London, thinking that she would go into banking. Unfortunately, she got duped, and that's not what happened. By the time she met Linal, she was planning on going back to Romania. And what she said to Linal was that, actually, I don't want to go back to be a banker. I want to be an entrepreneur, because I want to be my own boss, so I never have to go somewhere to find my find a job. And that's where HERA started. So HERA focuses really on two areas. We focus on the recovery part, where we do entrepreneurship training and mentoring, and we focus on taking the skills of the women, the survivor skills, and applying them in the business world. And they're actually very resilient business people because they have gone through a lot, they have a very high threshold, and they're real fighters. So we're building on that. Second of all, we also focus on everything that has to do with prevention and also recovery through the International Grants Program. And with that, the International Grants Program is meant to focus on some of the source countries that have produced the highest rates of trafficking. And we support businesses that have been successful in helping them scale so that they can hire more women and also create more jobs for everyone. So that's the model that we're looking at. I wanted to also cover the point about the recovery, because a lot of women are also coming back from abroad after their trafficking experience and going back home with very little opportunities. They want to keep it under wraps for a very understandable reason, for sometimes the stigma that is attached to trafficking. We support in both ways. So eventually, if we can find the slides, because I want to show some of the pictures of the ventures and the students. So to tell you a bit more about the entrepreneurship training, we focus really on in-class training. So we do we have speakers from academia, from the private sector. We have entrepreneurs coming in to speak to the women, and we make sure that not only they have an in-class, learning experience, but they also get the practical aspect of business. So we take them to Borough Market. They meet entrepreneurs. They talk to business owners. They really get to learn how the practical considerations of running your business. And yes, thank you. And so this is a little snapshot, so in-class learning. And then we also have partnerships with corporates. So we take them to the city, and they will hear from leading experts in the various fields. And we do everything from the more hard skills, like finance, marketing, anything that had to do with IT, media, to more soft skills. So negotiations, communications, presentation skills. And on the International Grants Program, so we have a team of very dedicated volunteers who are bankers, people who work in international development, people who are entrepreneurs, and we shortlist a group of ventures that apply to our entrepreneurship program, our grants program. And we set out, over a week or two to drive all over the countries visit the ventures, and we decide on the spot whether we fund or not. So it's very unbureaucratic, and we really get to see who's behind all the ventures. So here are examples. So we operate in Moldova, Armenia, Georgia, and Ukraine. So in Moldova, that's we have a farmer, and that's a machine to mix the food for. I'm sorry, I'm not quite the farmer, so I'm probably not giving it justice. But it's a food mixer. In Armenia, that's a cafe that we funded. In Georgia, this lady is a winemaker, and she was setting up her laboratory so that she can be a bit more precise on the contents of the ingredients so that she can export it to Europe. And finally, we have Ukraine, who's a handcraft entrepreneur. So through all of these ventures, over the years, we really started out small and just trying to have an impact, and we're very, very focused on impact. So we, in both the entrepreneurship program and the international grants program, we follow our grantees and our students through the years as best as we can. And we see whether their ventures survive, whether our students go on to progress in their careers, either setting up trying to set up a business, pursuing further education, or pursuing a professional career. And it's amazing what the whole organization with all the volunteers that we have can do. So we have trained in total more than 550 women over the years, and this is in 8 different countries. And we've awarded 254 grants, which represent creation of employment of more than double than that. So, and finally, you know, we can't do it without all the in-kind support that we get. So we get a lot of in-kind support from the private sector, from the academic side. We have a lot of leading experts in supporting us. And finally, we can't do it without the charities who refer to us the candidates for our program. And really, I just want to emphasize, the thing about HERA is that we're not forming, you know, people to be economically empowered, as in become economically independent. We really form the leaders of tomorrow. The women who go through our program multiply the effect. So we have seen a lot of our students go on to set up their business, but then they become managers at large banks as an accountant. They go on to pursue careers in fashion. They also do further education. We have a number of them in doing psychology, social work at master's and PhD level. And on the international grants program side, we have people who, when they receive a grant from HERA, also participate in our 3-day entrepreneurship a little conference. So it's an entrepreneurship training that happens over 2-3 days. And through that, people connect to each other, and they help other budding entrepreneurs, young women entrepreneurs, to set up a successful business. So this is it's something that is very close to our heart. Finally, I just wanted to say different ways to get involved. So please reach out to my colleagues. We have Joe here, Helen in the front with a yellow scarf, me, and Sarah in the back.
Johansa.
Yeah, please. There we go. And feel free to ask us any questions. We're always looking for business mentors, as well as volunteers, speakers, and we are also running a global giving campaign for International Women's Day. So every little bit helps. So please feel free to donate. Thank you very much.
Thank you so much, and we'll be hearing more from Elise Doe later on in the night. But let's start with Grace. So as I said, Grace is the founder of Egenio, and her objective is to make young children fall in love with math. And basically, she works with parents globally to develop new and interesting way to get people excited. I know you all are looking at me. Yes, I am talking about math. You get children and people excited about math as a way to transform and change their lives. What's absolutely amazing is that she's worked with the Nelson Mandela and Children Foundation and also with Amazon to make this dream a reality. So for the next 15 minutes, we want to hear from Grace to hear about her journey, her path to success, and what advice she can give you in designing and developing your own social enterprise. Grace?
Thank you for that, Lonnie. Thanks for having me today. It's beautiful to be in your midst, and it's a great honour to come and share my story, so thank you. In 1997, I saw an advert at my university. I was standing in front of some student union building, and I saw an advert that was asking for volunteers to go into schools and help children who were struggling with maths, build their maths confidence. This struck me, and it made my heart bleed, because I didn't understand why children were suffering so much from just learning maths. And that wasn't my experience. So I thought, you know, this is a noble cause. I certainly would do all I can to help and support. So I contacted Sir John Cass Foundation and asked to join them. My name is Grace Olubode, and I specialise in helping children fall in love with mathematics. I'm also the creator of the Race to Infinity Maths game, and I'm the author of the Make Maths Fun book. My background is computing, so I studied ABSE in computing. I had a first class, and I orchestrated my first class honours really through choosing the more maths-like units. And then I went on to do my master's in financial markets with information systems. I also then became a software programmer by trade. I'm a Java software programmer, and I worked in investment banks for many years. All along, I've sort of been involved in education as a volunteer, just because I'm very passionate about education. So I'm presently chair of governors in a primary school. I'm also a trustee and director on a board of a Central London University. So I'm really a software programmer turned social entrepreneur. Virginia, my company, creates maths games. We do online courses, we do live workshops, and we basically make maths fun for children and parents. We want to help parents to help their children love maths more, enjoy maths more, increase their confidence, and build more opportunities for a successful future, because that's what it is all about at the end of the day. We also work on helping children reduce mathematical anxiety. And we've had so many testimonials and a lot of support, a lot of endorsements from educational celebrities, from parents, teachers, head of tuition centres, educational centres, and it's been an amazing journey. Race to Infinity, my maths game, has moved forward a lot, I would say, in the last 12 months. Last year, I would say, was monumental. Race to Infinity won 3 National Game Awards. We were very lucky to win those. One after them last year at the Education Show in Birmingham, NEC. I exhibited there. And a lady walked up to me, chirpy, nice young lady, sort of medium height. And she came and she said, hi, I'm an Amazon buyer. And I thought, an Amazon buyer? I'm definitely in trouble. You know, like either the fulfillment house has probably sent the wrong games down to Amazon, or they've taken somebody else's products and sent them there, and you know, that's theft, that's even worse. You know, so I was so sure that I was definitely in trouble. But then she said, no, we are very impressed with your product so far, we've been watching you. We love your testimonials and your reviews so far, and we've seen the work that you've done, and we would like to partner with you. So I thought, partner? Like, what does that mean again? Well, Amazon, the $1 trillion company, wants to partner with me? Like, I actually didn't believe her. But the next day, I got an email, and that actually was the case, and the rest is history. So Amazon, now they buy wholesale, and they sell our games retail. We've been very lucky as well to win the Amazon badge. The the Amazon Choice Badge and also the Bestseller Badge quite a number of times in the UK and also in the US on Amazon. We're selling in about 10 countries now. Just by the virtue of being the person who created Race to Infinity, I've been very lucky as well to win 4 national awards as well. My journey hasn't been without its challenges. There have been lots of tears and lots of sleepless nights, as you can imagine, and lots and lots. And a lot of people always ask me, why do I do what I do? About 2 weeks ago, my number one mentor, my number one supporter, my inspiration behind creating my game, the person who pushed me to make sure that I get my game out, my father passed away. He was responsible for turning me into an average C student in maths to an A student in mathematics, such that I then started winning prizes in maths in secondary school, and people actually thought I was a genius. For the record, I'm not a genius at all. And that gave me a lot of confidence, that support that my father gave me that summer between primary school and secondary school. And that support, that confidence that I got from that support, I would say is responsible for everything, directly or indirectly, that I've achieved till date. And so several years on, when I was standing in front of my student union building and I saw this advert about children, I was very passionate about going in to help them because I didn't want children suffering from mathematical anxiety. But when we were doing this in schools, I realised that there were 3 key problems. And the first is that too many children hate maths, don't think that they can get good at it, and they find it a boring chore. The second is that they don't seem to be able to relate mathematics to real life very easily. And the third is that too many children don't have enough fun, creative ways to practice mathematics. Sadly, this can lead to low confidence and low self-esteem, and it can affect their life and their future. You may think that this is where the problem ends, but there is a bigger problem. And the problem is that too many parents are afraid of maths and don't know how to help their children. The youths nowadays are finding it harder to get good jobs without good math skills, or at least being comfortable enough with mathematics. Also, a while ago, government statistics showed that up to half the adults in the UK have numeracy levels no greater than that of an 11-year-old, and that this is costing our economy, the UK economy, £20 billion a year. 20 billion with a B. So you and I are paying for it. But I realise that the key to solving this problem, to stop us from paying for a problem that doesn't have to be, the solution is really to catch them young. And this is what got me thinking about creating something that would help parents at home. While we were helping children with schools, increase their maths confidence through games. It was through games and through creative ways we were doing things in a slightly different way. We had remarkable feedback, and we noticed that these children, within 6 weeks, their confidence was turning around, and in class they were able to, you know, raise their hands and engage a little bit more, and, you know, just be more confident generally about maths and believe that they can do it. And the teachers were telling us the same thing. And by the end of the academic year, they had actually raised their levels, all of them. And this was just initially within 6 weeks and then the academic year. And I thought, wow, I must do something to help parents. And so for a few years from then, I was thinking, what could I do? That's where my idea to develop my board game actually started from. So my solution initially was the board game, my Race to Infinity game there. And so with little funds and little know-how, I set out to create the game. Once I'd gotten the prototype ready, I tested the game like it was going out of fashion, like testing was going out of fashion. I remember playing this game a minimum of 150 times each between myself and each of my 2 kids. So, because we really just needed to make sure that it worked, and I didn't want to put something out there that didn't work. When it was ready in my eyes, I told my virgin startup mentor that my game was ready, and he looked at it and he said it was fantastic. The mechanics were fantastic, he said, but the board itself, he said, was all wrong. And he said, the board just doesn't work. And he said, ditch the board and start again. But there was one problem. I couldn't draw I don't still know how to draw. So I really had to overcome every single obstacle, from drawing to so many, many other things, to actually get my dream out there. And then I went out and learned how to sell on Amazon like my life depended on. So then my game, I recreated the board, and surprisingly, my Virgin Startup mentor said, this was amazing. And I thought that was just a stroke of luck, because maybe I'd have still been developing boards until now. And then I created the four-step methodology to go with the game, which covers maths fundamentals so that we can get children understanding basic maths by learning, but not realizing that they're learning, so they would think that they're playing through this methodology and the game. And the other thing I put in the game was what we call game replayability. In the games industry, most maths games don't have that ability of the game to bring you back to want to play over and over and over again, and this is what I worked on so hard to put into the Race Infinity game. Part of the methodology is also the big why, which is, why are children learning maths? So the children are understanding what maths is for and how it relates to their life. So we're making a difference, and we are changing the way that children view maths, and we're making children happier so that parents can worry less. I believe that everyone and every child can improve their math skills, including everyone here. I also believe that talent is overrated. There is no such thing as a maths person. Maths is really only a skill, and every skill just needs deliberate practice, but with the right guidance and the right support. My mission is to turn mathematics into a game that every child would love to play every time. I want to impact children globally the way that I've impacted my own two children, who have now become excellent in mathematics. I also want to not just help my children, but I want to help thousands of children, hundreds of children, millions of children all over the world, like my father, who not only supported me, but supported thousands of other youths as well in his time. The problem I really had was that before I launched it, I was really afraid, and I had this big fear around really launching it, because I thought it was going to fail. But then I also had no rest, and I literally couldn't sleep. And I felt bad helping my children get good at maths and get confident at maths, and all of these other children were not doing so well at maths and suffering from maths anxiety. And every time I had people tell me that, oh, my child is struggling, or my child's terrified, or my child is not confident about maths, I always felt bad. So I literally couldn't sleep at night. So in 2015, I resolved to get that game out, and I remember saying in the kitchen that if it was the last thing I did, I will get the board game out. And I said, even if it kills me, I will get the board game out. And that's how I decided then to overcome all obstacles that came my way, and you can imagine there were loads and loads and loads until I had my finished game. And when I actually finished the game, I didn't know whether to laugh or to cry, so I did both, because I felt like a failure and a success at the same time. Our customers are parents and schools that we sell to, B2C, but Amazon, who buy wholesale and sell retail, they sell to hospitals, and their customers are charities and hospitals and schools as well. So we've got 5 more games in the pipeline that we're developing, and we are planning to distribute to more countries. We've already translated the game into 5 different languages. We're selling in 10 countries at the moment, and we're doing more of those. We're raising awareness. We're speaking in corporates just to let parents know about the support that they can give their children, and we're showing parents how to support their children in mathematics, so, and without even having to teach mathematics. So it's possible. And we're going digital. And my greatest joy is really when somebody says to me that, you know, both parents and children are alike, when they say, thank you for changing my life. And a lot of people have said to me, maths will never be the same again. You know, that's the greatest thing that I get from it. It's that fulfillment and just being around those children who are getting more confident. We partnered with the Nelson Mandela Children's Trust Children Fund last year, and one of the events we ran was a memorable one in a hotel in the city, a Strand area. And we gave away games that cost to 150 women, and a lot of them went on and gave it to other children in other parts of, in other countries, really, you know, South Africa and in orphanages, and children were playing it and enjoying it and actually increasing their maths confidence. we are also launching our 10%, we're going to be giving 10% of our profits also to the Nelson Mandela Trust Fund, Children Fund, sorry. And that's going to be this year onwards that we're actually launching that. So all of this I'm talking about, the very essence of it is not just about maths. You know, maths teaches resilience, it teaches curiosity, it teaches positive mental attitudes. I use mathematics to cultivate self-confidence, self-worth, self-esteem. And it's the encouraging of brilliant options for children as they grow up, so that they have even more options as they're growing up. So in summary, my story of social entrepreneurship really started from my father's support when I was 10 years old, and how he turned me around from an average C student to an A student in maths, and then I went into study to have a first class in computing, and then finally markets, then investment banking, then became a software programmer, and now a social entrepreneur, a maths person, so to speak, and then now manufacturing and exporting, employing, you know, providing jobs and so, and partner with a global charity, lucky enough to partner with a big company like Amazon, and been 20 years so far now in the education industry, doing a lot of volunteer work and just supporting and being chair of governors and trustees in organisations. So my heartbeat, really, my addiction is helping children fall in love with mathematics. So I do want to encourage you that if you have a dream, go for it, focus, keep the distractions away, laser focus, because in there lies fulfillment for many, many, many different lives that you will change, and you would have a calling that nobody else can do but you. So I've been Grace, and I help children fall in love with mathematics.
Thank you so much, Grace, for your inspiring story. I really love the fact that we have different types of social entrepreneurs here. Grace is a niche social entrepreneur who just focuses on one, her focus is solely on math, and she's exceptional at it. What really struck me is when she talked about doing the things that break your heart. Like, the one thing that defines a social entrepreneur is that your passion, your commitment, your 100% drive associated with whatever breaks your heart. So thank you for such an inspiring speech. Next we have Ana Maria Torres from Pio Sagrado. I met Ana Maria through an alum, which is a student of mine, an ex-student of mine, who said you have to meet Ana Maria. Right? All things good start with the words you have to meet, right? You have to meet Ana Maria. Ana Maria runs an organization that's very distinct from a lot of social enterprises. Very much in the area of social entrepreneurship, we've been hearing a lot about systemic impact, which is not just about impacting beneficiaries in one way, but impacting them in multiple different ways. And there are very few organizations that do systemic impact well, except Ana Maria's Higo Sagrado. So I want to introduce you to Ana Maria now and let her tell you a little bit about her journey, her enterprise, and what she's doing in Colombia to change the lives of people there.
Awesome. Thank you everyone for being here. It's a real pleasure for me to be here, especially at the university where I sat 10 years ago. So I was a student like you 10 years ago, dreaming about doing something different, something special. And 10 years later, here I am. I'm going to tell you about what I created, and I'm really excited to share this experience with you. How many of you are entrepreneurs? How many of you would like to create a startup? Wow, that's exciting. Okay, so Hilo Sagrado. So Hilo Sagrado, I want to tell you a little bit. We created Hilo Sagrado in 2015. And with the vision of combining creativity, technology, woman empowerment, and bringing all those things together to solve a social big issue that we had. So when I was traveling in 2014, I was traveling around the country. I'm originally from Colombia, and I was visiting the Caribbean Sea, which is the northern part of Colombia. It's a desert area surrounded by a gorgeous Caribbean Sea. the inhabitants in La Guajira, Colombia, are people like Evelisa. So Evelisa is one of the 42 million people in indigenous communities in Latin America that have no access to water, no access to electricity, no access to education. And while I was traveling and visiting, something that really shocked me was that the communities used to live with the cattle or animals that they will have, but because of climate change, temperatures are rising so much that animals were dying, and even children were dying with no access to water. So the emergency was there, and when I was traveling, I just couldn't stop thinking how to bring a solution that will be more comprehensive to the special needs of those communities. So while I was working for many, many years on entrepreneurship, and it came so natural to me to start talking with women there and coaching them on entrepreneurship. So trying to bring these entrepreneurship skills to them at the local level and see how could we, in these communities, the main activity is handcrafts. So how could help them develop more innovative products that could not be just focused to the local market, but could be tailored to the global market with a design, with a quality that will meet those standards. So we start working with a team of really, really multidisciplinary skills. And we got together and we said, well, if we get together, can we set up a program where probably these young entrepreneurs or artisans will go through it's kind of an incubation program that they will be learning by doing. So it's not just to bring them the information, but help them to do it at the same time so they will be able to learn by doing. So we created this incubation program of a year where we will bring them all the necessary skills that need to come up with new products to present at the end of the year in the biggest show that Colombia had of fashion and design in the main capital city, Bogota. So that third year, I was living abroad. Most of the designers were living abroad, but to the platform we were connecting. So we were connecting global talent, global designers, local artisans, and we will also bring in experts in a specific sectors that were of a need of those local communities. So we start working on empowerment and bringing education and creative change at the local level. We started with these 14 women, and I just thought that the idea, it needed to be tested and see how you will kind of change it and adapt it. And very, very rapidly, and to our surprise, we started with this 14 women. We created 5 different centers in these localities. We trained 5 different local leaders that then will be training their local communities. And within a year, we had 150 women leading 150 communities. And now, 3 years later, we're having 1,500 beneficiaries just in Colombia. So that is a multiplier effect. What we have been able to do is that the platform connects with businesses. So we've got the B2B business component. And these entrepreneurs now, after that year, now 3 years later, they've been able to grow their profits by 600%. In that case, in some cases means having dinner, in some cases means having now water, having different access to basic services that they didn't have before. We did also partner with multiple businesses. We're working with 20 countries around the world. Our leaders are now taking all the exports by themselves, just the leaders. So the idea is to keep working with those 150 local communities so they slowly will taking the leadership of their own communities and multiply that at the local level. We wouldn't be able to do this, and especially to focus on our social impact projects that I'm going to mention a couple of examples. Without partnering with businesses, partnering with the government, partnering with other organizations that are focusing on the same topic. So for example, here we have worked with one of the largest airlines in Colombia. We didn't know, we couldn't afford to travel or to pay for the trainers to go to those regions. It's super expensive because it's not very well connected and you have to fly and they're in the middle of nowhere. So once you get to the desert, you could drive 14 hours and nobody knows how to get there because it's a desert. So it was really expensive just to get there. So we brought on board Avianca, which is one of the top Latin American airlines. And they really love our project and they say, okay, we're willing to mobilize talent if you promise me that you're getting these people trained and what you say you're doing. So a year later, it was fascinating. We were able to bring experts from around the world. And it's like, imagine, like bringing LSE to this local community and translate it to the kind of local language. We also have multiple organizations where do specific projects, and we wouldn't have been able to do anything if it weren't because we got together. And at the end, this became like a movement that we were people following, business supporting. We also got celebrities on the way that really believe in the products and the impact that this was creating at the local level. And then we created a reward system. And this reward system is something that we developed as we went. And it means many communities, you'll find that people sometimes try to go and give them for free food. But that solves one day problem, right? That's one day solution. So how do you come up with something that is tangible, but it's also create a long-lasting impact? So now with the reward system is what I said. So for those leaders who are doing well, who are working really hard to learn, to make the most effort to take their community out of poverty, we partner with specific companies. And in this case, we partner with Little Sun because they don't have energy in those communities. So we were able to bring solar panels as a bonus for their efforts and their hard work. So they will be able to have a little bit of energy after sunset. We also, some communities with a specific need. So there's another community where we work bringing water. They didn't have drinking water. So we created the first biosand filters in those local communities. And now the communities are implementing this project at the whole regional level funded by the government. This is just a couple of examples. The same with education. So we have specific companies who want to support our efforts on education. So we brought materials, and this project was huge, was for all the 1,500 beneficiaries this last year. We couldn't physically execute it. So we have to call the army of Colombia to say, you know, we need manpower to kind of transfer all the materials because we had it. We set up a school in the region and we're very, very proud to get things going. And finally, just to be really brief, we're lucky to be globally recognized. We've been part of the Young Leaders of the Americas. We consider one of the top solutions, social solutions impacting life. And the government of Israel as well has given a special award for social entrepreneurship. And then things go on, but I think the recognitions wouldn't be there if it weren't because it was we worked as a team. Everyone is like, Hilo Sagrado is a family. So we've got the leadership team, then we've got all these fantastic experts who have come from all around the world. They're not just from Colombia. They're coming from many, many different countries to join this mission and having these results. I want to invite you all to join us. Follow us on Instagram, Facebook. We're always updating everything that we do at the social level, but also on the business level. Thank you.
much, Anna Maria. I mean, what an exciting story. What I love about it is I describe her business as why not. When I met Anna Maria, every time she told me, why not invite the army? Why not get a national airline? Why not ask God to intervene and let the rain fall? Like, anything is possible. And I think that's extremely inspiring. And also, the systemic change is so palpable in this example, right? So we're talking about bringing electricity, bringing water, not just about an arts and crafts business, but thinking how you can systemically change the lives of the people who are involved in your business. So thank you so much. So we've had a niche business that's changing the world and making us love math. We have another business that's building systems around communities to change the lives of the beneficiary. And now, our last presentation tonight, we have HERA, who to me is a hero organization. And it's a hero organization because it actually deals with what I consider to be the last mile. Often people who are much less interesting to help, right? A lot of the funding that comes to these areas tend to be much less than a big tech platform that can change the world or microfinance. But instead, organizations like HERA are really doing the heavy lifting and really transforming lives of people who are often forgotten in society. So I want to ask Elise to come and do the final presentation on HERA to give you a lot more details, as well as her own background, her entrepreneurial journey, and any advice that she would give to you as young entrepreneurs or potential entrepreneurs. Elise.
I don't need the presentation, so if you prefer, I can do it.
Yeah.
Next to the mic. Although my voice projects, so I don't tend to need a mic. So I've told you guys quite a lot about HERA, but I'd like to share with you a bit more what it actually means to me. And we have an entrepreneur budding here. So a bit about me is really simple. So I'm a banker by day, and I do HERA by night. And I did everything corporate in terms of my professional career. I was a trader, then I did corporate finance, I worked in debt capital markets, and now I'm a banker in M&A, I do renewable energy. And then there's another side of me that has always, it's always been an interest for me to give back somehow, because I feel like I've had a lot of opportunities and sometimes people have given me chances to go forward. And when I discovered HERA, I was actually doing my MBA, so I was working full-time, doing my MBA part-time, and I had little time for anything else. But then I saw HERA pass by, and it said, we're looking for business mentors. And I read about the mission of HERA, focusing on entrepreneurship training for women survivors of trafficking. I thought it was really innovative, really cutting edge. It's melting a whole lot of different parts of society, business, nonprofits, all together. So it definitely piqued my curiosity. So I finished my degree. Next thing I wanted to do was to get involved with HERA. So I started as a business mentor about 6 years ago. I mentored for a few years, and then I gradually joined the board. So I became the treasurer. The board needed someone who could do numbers, so tick, I can do that. Probably not as good as Grace and the board games, but I can just about. And then I took over as chair of the board, following in the footsteps of the founder, Manellen Long. She's a force of character, so it was really big shoes to fill. Over the years, though, what I've really been so surprised and really humbled by HERA, it's all the participants, everyone doing HERA. And the transformational aspect of HERA during not only during the three-week summer program that we do, which is little, it's very little time, but it's very transformational. And it's not just about what we do in terms of material, but it's the bubble and the environment that we create that I've learned over time, that the intangible aspects of what you create is actually very important. So you can have the main ingredients, you can tick the boxes, and I'm teaching this, I'm teaching that, but it's how do you create that environment for women who might have never been told you're worth it, or that you're worth all the skyscrapers that you're being put in. You're put in front of all these speakers, entrepreneurs, inspiring people. And it's also a place where women for the first time in a while can really think about their long-term future and what they want to do. And we're there to support them with every little resource that we have. And in that, I also think that in the international program, we have a different approach. So it's really focused on the small businesses, and they're making, it could be social businesses, it could be NGOs, or it could be just, you know, a farmer, someone looking to grow their business. And it's really nice to see when you go on the ground and see how much they're contributing in their own communities, and in turn teach other women how to be entrepreneurs and how to set up their business. So, and all in all, and yes, we have a lot of staff and volunteers. I think that's something that I want to touch upon. So earlier, I talked about all the participation of volunteers, speakers, leading industry experts. And what I found to be extremely valuable is the fact that we are the intersection of all these different areas. And social entrepreneurship is, I think, really about that. It's not, I mean, I'm in the private sector, so I can say that social entrepreneurship is way more complicated, but it's also more fun and more challenging. And one of the tips that I would say is that test things out, you know, and focus on the impact. Because if you don't focus the results and you don't, you know, follow them, you will never know how much impact you really have. And part of HERA is really that. So once your students move on, we really focus on, okay, you know, what are you working on a business venture? Are you still seeing your mentor? Are you still pursuing further education? So these very specific targets will allow you to know whether you have the right impact or not. And same on the international program. One thing I really want to say is that our business mentors, they're fantastic people, and it's really a community of people that have supported our women throughout their journeys. They don't, you know, sometimes it works and sometimes it doesn't. Life is not always straightforward, but HERA is there to create that ideal environment as best as we can to help the women go forward. And through that, I guess some personal nuggets, although I'm sure you all have very good experiences. One of the things that I actually learned from the students myself is that willingness, that sometimes you feel very weak, but actually there's so much strength in you. And when you feel like you're, and I've actually learned from HERA students when I've had difficulties in my own work and personal life, I look at these women and I really go, wow, you know, if they can do it, I better, you know, kick my behind and get it done too. The other thing that I touched upon was about breaking down barriers. You know, we have interests. You start with this and then you start with that. You know, it doesn't always have to be so structured. Sometimes doing and trying and testing is the best way forward. So if you're interested in something, just look into it or participate. And if it doesn't work, then that's fine. Or if you have an idea, you want to test it out, test it out. Try it. Someone says it's crap, well, it's crap. And then you work at it, and then you try something different. And the last thing based on that is really, I think we live in a society where it's extremely siloed. And one of the things that I realized personally that I was able to make an impact is that my experience in the private sector also helps with what we do in the charity sector. And breaking down those barriers of all these different industries and silos, I think the future is really about taking out those barriers and creating links and integrating. So just a little note, and this is what personally I really loved about HERA. It's super complex, it's not easy, it's challenging, but it's really, really intellectually, emotionally stimulating. And I thank everyone who has participated in HERA, who have supported us over the years in any way, shape, or form. I thank the students as well, who have been a great source of inspiration for me, and who really give me the strength and courage to go into these corporates, pitch for HERA, pitch for the women, and make sure that we're there tomorrow as well. Thank you.
Okay, thank you so much to our incredible panel. We're now going to open the floor for questions. We're going to have a mic, a roving mic, and basically we would like you to say your name, your affiliation, you're a student at the LSC, or which organization you're with. And please speak into the mic because, of course, as I said, it's being taped, so we would like to hear your questions very clearly. So without further ado, any questions? And also, you can refer to the whole panel, or you can ask questions to a specific member of the panel. Just say so. Okay. In the black, third row from the back. Yeah.
Hello, I hope I won't start coughing. Sorry about that. My name is Louise Micah. I'm currently Head of Policy and Public Affairs at World Cancer Research Fund International. And it's been really interesting to hear all the great things that you're doing, all the things that's going well. I'd like to know at least one thing that didn't work and what you learned from it.
Awesome.
Great question. One thing that didn't work, that did not work, is definitely my board for my board game, and you can't release a game without a board. So, and I didn't know how to draw, so I felt that my dream was shattered when I was told that the board was actually all wrong. And so what I learned from that is really, looking back, if I hadn't still gone back and thought my dream isn't going to die and I'm going to go and do it and I'm going to retry, I literally got home, got a sheet of paper and started drawing and drew and redrew and did it over and over until it worked. So the main thing there is really just never giving up. If you've got that passion, if you've got that determination to do things, there's a saying that says that the moment you decide to do something, like all manners of things that you need will just start coming together. They might look a bit coincidental, but they'll just start coming, all the resources you need. So what I really learned from that is that making up my mind to do it was the main thing that really turned things around for me. And I think for everybody here, once you make up your mind to do something, then what you need to do it some way or another will come.
Excellent point.
Yeah, I think we'll have a whole new lecture on what didn't work. It could be just an endless lecture because things are always, on a day-to-day, you plan for something and something else comes up, which is fantastic in a way. Like, I never thought I would have created ELO and kind of spontaneously and organically would grow so rapidly. One assumption that didn't work, we thought that once we train some leaders at the local level, they'll be willing to share their expertise and knowledge, and they were not interested in sharing it. So we didn't have the capacity to go and train each one differently. The assumption we had was, okay, if we identify one leader in that community, then we expect that leader to pass that knowledge to the other members of the community. And some communities were like, no, like, I learned this for me, I don't want to share it. Find another solution for that community. So that'll be like one thing, but I'd love to have a whole new lecture about things that don't work.
Yeah. In our case, we've had programs that didn't work. So we've set up programs abroad in different cities, and sometimes it has not sustained because you don't have the right people, and you didn't have maybe the right intangible elements of the training. But on a more personal note, where it really it pains me, it's when I see one of our students who's
you know, who's done really well at Hera. And you have to understand that the women who are in the Hera program, they are honestly, they deal with extremely impossible situations. And by this, I mean, you know, we've had people who've gone to, had to escape from authorities because they were being deported. They are waiting for immigration status for 10 years, even though they clearly display, you know, the willingness to work and to contribute to society, but they're not allowed to work. And this is, to be fair, one of the hardest things that Hera has to deal with is to go with the flow of things that are totally not in your control. The other thing that I learned the hard way was that not everyone wants to support women who are trafficked. And it's, you know, as much as when I say this to people, people are very surprised. I say, well, you know, you have to understand that some people use these services or who are much closer to that than we think. And I would say those are really the things that hit home. And it's not, and I think our business mentors also deal with this a lot. Sometimes people have to disappear. They're being sent back to their countries where they have no, you know, they're still worried for their safety. So we deal with a lot of difficult situations, but at the end of the day, you have to focus on the few that actually make it, do well, and the incredible thing is really stamina. And they support each other, not only the students between one another, but also the business mentors.
Okay, awesome. Another question? Yes, in the middle.
Oh, hello. My name is Rathan Sari. I'm a professor at Imperial College, but I'm also an alumnus of LSU.
Oh, wonderful. Welcome.
Almost 2 years ago. My question is directed at all of the panel, but certainly Eliza. Sometime a precursor of social enterprise movement occurred in Africa sometime in the was called M-Pesa.
Yes.
Which is a game that was designed to empower women, where a social banking sector was set up. I wonder whether the panel members have any thoughts on how to scale that up and relevance of that movement more generally.
Okay, so how to scale their businesses up?
That's how to scale up M-Pesa.
Oh, M-Pesa.
And to bring them into the wider, because the term social enterprise is probably more recent.
Yeah.
More relevant.
Yeah.
But how to bring such activities up in the wider country?
Just by coincidence, I'll be very happy to respond that to you, because I also, in my other previous life, I work a lot on financial access to communities, particularly in the Western Hemisphere, in third-world countries. I know M-Pesa is actually in Kenya, is that right?
Yes.
Yeah. Bringing financial access to women and to anyone, really, at the click of their phone. Very interestingly enough, when I heard about that, I thought, it's brilliant. Who wouldn't like to have access to, you know, like banking on your phone? However, it's really interesting to see how there are different ecosystems in different countries that restrict that possibility because of, especially where I'm coming from the Colombia, but also understanding more the Americas law structure. It's something that it won't go well there because of the policies and restrictions for, especially kind of, it's not easy for telecommunications companies to tap into the banking sector because that different rules. So bringing that example to this panel and what we're doing, and for those entrepreneurs who want to do something that could work in that environment and it could be seen as a super successful initiative, it might not work in other settings because the ecosystem and the infrastructure is different. So in this case, when we were trying to pilot access to finance for base of the pyramid, the banking structure is really strong in those countries, Mexico, Peru, Colombia. So they would not allow telecommunication companies to deal with the financial aspect. It's really interesting, and it also is interesting to me because I was working on that. But they are other ways that in that case are working. But I agree with you. I think solutions should be seen in favor of the user, of the customer. But sometimes when you've got policies set up, there's some special policies that restrict innovation because they need to consider so many things behind. So it's not as simple. I wish to say that sometimes some solution will be the solution for all, but it's really complicated matter.
Yeah, thank you so much for your question. For those of you who didn't understand the context of M-Pesa, M-Pesa allows you to transfer cash via your mobile. So a telecommunication company is actually the intermediary there. And what Anna Maria is saying is that although that works amazingly in Nairobi and really supports women entrepreneurs there, it really couldn't be transferred to Colombia because of the different infrastructure and government rules. But it's a great question. Any other questions? Yes, with the scarf in front. Yes. Yes. Thank you.
Hi, my name is Clarine Varon, and I'm an associate at the executive search firm Grace Blue. I have two questions. The first is, you've had to build your businesses and define your own leadership. I would love to learn more about how you've defined the leadership and how you've used that to make your businesses successful. And I would be interested to understand how you've managed to scale your businesses locally and internationally.
Wow, big question. Shall we start with Anna Maria again?
Yeah. Okay. It's a great question. And I think for any type of project that you do, I think leadership and the team is key. In my specific case, I was we still have a fantastic leadership team of three women. We're all in different countries. We're all in different time frames. And but we're super connected, and that was the great thing of today's world, that you can work anywhere and be connected if you have access to that technology. So that leadership, I don't think I define it. I think I never had time to say, okay, what's that? I didn't have time. I was like, I'm an executor, so I'm like, I just go. And then I partner with these amazing other two women who brought completely different set of skills to the team. So in my case, I work on social impact and entrepreneurship, and then I partner with an engineer and creative mind who brought another set of skills to the team, and I partnered with another designer, which is really key. She's now the leader of Hilo Sagrado, in a sense at the local level in Colombia. So I think what it was great for us was that we team up. We were a team, so it was like not just one person. I wouldn't say that I've done everything myself. I wouldn't have done anything myself if it weren't because we had a strong team behind. And what it was excellent was that we were able to attract more people with that passion, with that drive, with that capacity to bring solutions to the table. So I think whenever you're considering setting up something, try to partner with those ones who you complement, but also who really think and you share the same vision. And what was the other question? Sorry.
About scaling.
That's another super, super important question. I'm just going to be really honest. It was in Colombia, in our Colombian setting, was really, really hard to scale up because we were set up as an NGO, because we had a social component of it and our partners. It makes sense for us to be released as an NGO. They didn't have at that time a social business. Now they do, but at that time they didn't have it. So we created the NGO. When we were scaling so rapidly, we had to set up another institution in the US. And that's how we were able to move on. Because sometimes at the local levels, I have to say there are some countries that are enablers. Some countries that restrict you so much that you can get to a certain level. So in that sense, I think you gotta be really creative and find solutions where they could work.
Wonderful. And Grace?
With leadership, and Anna Maria, you've sort of taken the words out of my mouth. With leadership, it's important to find the people that have skills that you don't have, the things that you're not very good at. We want to partner with those sort of people. So in our team, we've got five of us, and the other two ladies who are with me in the UK, they're fantastic at different things. I'm very detailed to a fault. I test things like forever until it dies. But, you know, Jen, on the other hand, she's really very quick at getting stuff done. You know, tell me to create a Word document or a PowerPoint document. It'll take me like ages that I'll be checking it over and over again and making sure it's perfect. But Jen will put the stuff together like really quickly. So we partner really well. And then we've got Heidi, who's got slightly different kind of skill set. She's very good at research and she can pick out things so quickly and easily. So, you know, putting us all together and those of us who are heading up the marketing, myself and Jen, we have also complementary skills. And then we've got other people who work with us who are not in this country, two other people in two different countries, who are good at what they do. Some of them are good at, I'm good at numbers, but I wanted somebody else who was good at numbers so that I could do the things that no one else can do. So I've been trying to take away some of the things I'm doing, giving to other people who are good at those things so that I can do things that none of them can do. For example, create the games, bring the ideas and, you know, work on scaling. With scaling, partnerships is the key, meaning partnerships with an outside organization. So we, you know, Amazon has been really instrumental in our scaling. So we were scaling laterally, and then we're back to where we were. For example, in the USA, when we got in the USA, Amazon, we were having results like two times as fast as we were getting in the UK, even though we started in the UK first. So certain countries, just like you said, are like, you know, there's something about
the ecosystem.
And also they've got numbers, you know, so you want to also, when you're scaling, you want to look at the countries where what you're doing matters there, you know, what are the main values that you can see, and you want to sort of start from those countries. And then what I also found is that partnering with bigger organizations is really key. So apart from Amazon, we've also got another company now that we're partnering with. They're really, really big. I can't actually mention them yet, but it's so exciting. Partnered with another company earlier on late last year, and they've got 400 million customers, you know. And so all of those results we're going to be seeing this year. So it's really partnering is what I would say the key to scaling is after you've done your own groundwork up front.
Okay, Annelies?
Yeah, look, short one. I think it's for us at least, it's really about aligned values, because we have, essentially, it's entirely run by volunteers. We've got one employee, and it's a challenge for us, but it's really about passion and people who get it. For us, the scaling part is, how do you ensure that you maintain the quality and you maintain the intangible of the program? Because that's what the success of the program is. And unless you have people who really get it and who really see the potential in these women, it's not going to fly. So the intangible element, it really comes from the embodiment of the person.
Excellent. I have time for maybe two questions. I'll take it and you'll join questions. So in the scarf and then in the blue shirt.
Hi, my name is Simone Bosch. I'm a lawyer and public health consultant. I work for myself. I don't have a deep question. It's actually just a very straightforward one. I'm very sorry if you said it and I didn't hear it, but it's from Nicholas Lagrell. I didn't actually understand how that platform works and what exactly the product is from which you started and then built all these other amazing initiatives.
Okay, so platform, your question in the blue shirt. I'm taking down a few questions and then you get them all done before. In the blue shirt. Thank you.
First of all, thank you very much for this prescribing event. My name is David, I'm a master student at SOAS, and I'm an entrepreneur engaged in green finance. And I have the question, how did you manage the organizations where you get funded from, where you get funding from, that they took you serious, and they, and how did you contact them? Did you just write an email and say, I have an amazing idea, like one of the other people? Or like, how did you manage that they took you actually seriously and that you got the money?
Awesome. And there was one last one, and we'll take that in the white, and that's it. Yes, if you can.
Hi, my name is Audrey Tambadai. I am a volunteer at A21, which is a human rights organisation in London. I'm a law student and I'm also an entrepreneur. Thank you so much for sharing your heart tonight. We really do appreciate it. One question / two. Can be really cheeky if I...
Don't make me regret this. Okay.
Yes. For all of you, what's your legacy that you want to leave for the people that you're impacting on your business? Like, what's your personal legacy? And second of all, Elise, you talked about breaking down barriers, which I found really interesting. And it sounds like you've all done that in your different spheres, so partnering up with larger organisations. What would you say is really the key in doing that?
Okay, so I'm going to lead. Thank you very much. That's the close of the question. So I'm going to lead. We'll start with Elise. Elise, your two questions are about finance, legacy, and maybe a little bit about breaking down barriers.
Yes. In terms of breaking down barriers, just ask. Always ask. It's like, hey, I've got this thing for you. And it also ties into the financing. You got to ask. And but the one thing that was very positive about financing is that I realized that on paper, you can describe Hera. But I tried to bring people to Hera so that they can feel it. And when they feel it and they see it, they get it. So that's one of the ways to do it. Get them to experience it. And they're more likely to see what you're about. But yeah, you always have to ask. And when you do ask, you know, try to find the link of why it's interesting for them. So it's a lot of pitching. And funnily enough, before I was a banker, I was actually on the client side. But I got so used to pitching for Hera that I was actually a decent banker, you know? So that would be my suggestion.
Awesome. And Grace?
Same questions?
Oh, yes. So it would be finance.
Okay.
How did you raise money? How did you get finance? What's the legacy you want to leave? And, you know, what sort of barriers did you feel that you had to break, possibly even if you can focus being a woman and maybe specifics to being a woman?
Yeah.
Yes.
With finance, I would advise you start going to events in which they talk about finance, raising investment, because that's how I eventually got my investor who financed my business, who invested in my business. I saw the event pop up. It was in Manchester. Funny enough, I was born in Manchester, so I thought, oh, okay, might be a good time to go back. You know, so I got on the train and went all the way to Manchester for this event, and it was about teaching us how to prepare our pitch decks and things like that. And I actually wasn't ready for finance, to actually get financed then, because I thought, oh, I need to get ready and to new. I mean, I hadn't launched. It was only 3 months. I launched in December 2016, and I started looking for investments in January. Not because I was going to get it straight away, but because I wanted to start learning what it entailed. So it's important to go to those sort of events. And from there, one of the speakers, he took a liking to what I do, and he said, you know, you're only looking for very little, and I deal with this large amount. But you know what? I like you. I just want to help you in a way. And he said, you know, let's meet up in London for a coffee. And then he apparently runs events where he gets entrepreneurs to come and pitch, and then he would get people who can invest who are in the room. So we did one or two of those, and then the second one, even the first one, I got a couple of people who wanted to invest. But the second one, there was a lady, and she loves me, I absolutely love her, and she's a social investor, altruistic sort of investor, and she's passionate about the whole maths thing, and she loves girls and women and all that.
So that's how I got that investment. So you do need this sort of investor relations person in between, though, which is that guy who was sticking. So go to those events and you'll meet them. And the second is legacy.
Legacy.
I want to encourage children to be confident, and I think the root, I'm a bit biased, but I think the root is mathematics. It's making sure that they're confident in maths. So that's mine. And in the next 5 years, I want to reach 1 million children all over the world.
Wow.
Right. And
barrier. Just one barrier.
One barrier. Oh, God. Even that's a barrier in itself. it was certainly that, you know, I'm a girl.
Yeah.
Like, who creates, like, what normal people create games anyway? A board game. And then what normal girls go and create maths games? You know, you just don't really see that. So I actually don't know anybody else. Okay, I know a lady who created a finance, you know, kind of game, but I don't know anyone who created a maths game who's a girl. So it's kind of very, very, very different. But you know what? Even though it was a barrier, it was a strength for me, because then all these investors, I'm the person who, you know, they had all these guys that went for PowerPoints and all that, came to pitch, but I'm the person that they said, oh, we want to invest in her, she's very interested, we want to know more about her and all that. So actually, those barriers would actually end up being strengths for you.
Awesome. And Anna Maria, platform quickly, how do you get finance, and maybe one barrier?
Perfect. So the platform, what it does is that it connects creative talent, global creative talent, with businesses and artisans, and they can co-create new products. The products that these artisans that we have, which are at the base of the pyramid, are very handcrafts that they used to be only designed for the local market. So now with this co-creation, they come up with different innovative products. It could be not just on the fashion line, but also on the home line. And they can develop with that co-creation. What has happened is that they now have a product that it was just something that probably you couldn't even sell in the local market, but it's a product that has quality, design, and it has rescued some of the cultural heritage that these communities have. That product will go then to business, as I said, the clients will be businesses. So we work together with big businesses around the world to create, co-create new things. And what the platform allows you to do is that they can do the co-design online. So it doesn't matter if they are in the desert, in the middle of the desert, and the designer is in New York, and the business is in Australia. Everything comes together. So that's one part of it. Now, barriers, oh my lord. Endless barriers. And what was the question? How to break down those barriers?
Yeah.
I'll say there are two parts of it. One is to what kind of grows organically. As when we had the first year, some of the entrepreneurs that came of the local level and they traveled and they participated in the show, it was such a large show. It's probably more than 3,000 people visit this show, focus on these businesses. We just couldn't cope with the demand of organizations, government. Like, many people just wanted to contact us. And for us, for me, especially the first time we did it, it was just such a simple idea. Like, I didn't thought it was like I'm creating, you know, like a new world. But I just think just putting the example out there, organically, you're going to get some feedback. That's one way. And the other way is, of course, pitching. Not being worried about at some point I have to talk to presidents because of the magnitude of some projects that we're scanning. And I'm like, how are you going to reach a president? I'm like, I don't know. I have to send a letter and see what happens. So just try it. Just try it. Probably 1 in 100, you're not going to get a response. But probably 1 in 100, you're going to get a response. You know, so just try. And the last one,
finance. Yeah.
Same. In this specific case, finance has come for us through awards and through partners, large partners who believe in one specific project and we develop it. Because we are based, it's a social idea and it's registered as an NGO, we cannot get equity. And that's one of the things that will be really interesting for you or any of you who are considering social business. There are countries that the law is available for social business, and it is important because they will tax you as you were just 100% profitable, and that's not our case. So for us, it didn't make much sense back then to register as a business, because otherwise you're going to get taxable as a business. But then trying to see those structures in those countries that are already in place for social businesses, because that will benefit you when raising capital.
Okay, thank you so much. I know I'm meant to end now, but I am from the LSE, and there is no way I can end any session without asking our panelists in one, literally in 10 seconds, is there anything that our audience should either be reading, meaning a book that changed your life, a podcast, or a Twitter feed that you follow, that you can just tell them and give them some advice? So just, this is my last question. So starting from Grace, and we'll just go quickly. Anything that they should be reading, any podcast they should be following, or any Twitter feed that inspires you, or website, or anything as a social entrepreneur?
Yeah, I would say the book, The One Thing, really, you know, that hit home for me. So it was about focusing on one thing, you know, so what is the one thing that you're mainly going to focus on and do and get done? Because getting things done is quite hard. Everyone's distracted by a lot of other things. And even as women, you know, a lot of us have so many things to deal with. And then you add kids on top of it. That makes it even, you know, a lot more worse to actually focus. So that book, The One Thing by Gary Keller, I'd definitely recommend that.
Awesome.
Simplicity. Keep it simple. Try one thing, but try it.
Yeah.
So that's a book, Simplicity
is your book?
Yeah.
The One Thing. Okay, we have a theme here, folks.
Oh, goodness. I think Amy Cottle from a TED Talk, she talks about... Oh, yeah. Yeah, you know, right? yeah, she talks about presence and...
Power posing. Okay, power pose. Okay, Amy Cuddle, power pose. Okay, thank you everyone for coming tonight. It's been such a pleasure.